Okay, it looks like we're ready to go, so I'll call the next case, which is case number 76040, Stephen Silberkraus et al. Versus Joyce Woodhouse and Nicole Cannizzaro on their respective committees here with the Secretary of State in her official capacity and the Registrar of Voters at Clark County in his official capacity. Mr. Wald representing the appellants, Mr. Elias representing the respondents. Mr. Wald, would you like to reserve any time for rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor, I'd like to reserve about 3 minutes, if I could.
Right. And for the record, I see that Senator Cannizzaro and Senator Woodhouse are here with a number of their colleagues as well. So you may proceed.
Thank you, Chief Justice Gibbons and Associate Justices. Thank you for this opportunity that I have to be here today to represent the appellants on this case, the real parties in interest who have been seeking for the recall of Senators Woodhouse and Cannizzaro. The remedy that is provided in the Constitution of a recall is denied if it's delayed. And this case demonstrates that as strongly as anything could possibly demonstrate that. In this case, far more than a year ago, the parties began their efforts to recall these senators, and yet at this time, those senators are sitting in the 2019 Senate, and the recall that should have taken place some time ago has never happened. The Constitution is clear on its requirement of what has to happen for a recall election. The answering brief repeatedly states only 8 months after they were elected, without any misconduct on their part and without any cause, the recall petitions were started. This is a focus on the wrong issue because it's a focus on the issue, an emotional issue that has no place in this legal question that is presented to the court. The Constitution allows for the remedy of a recall, and that remedy is not based upon misconduct, and it is not based upon any cause. It is simply based upon having enough signatures from those who voted in the prior election in order to cause the recall to happen. And that happened in this case.
Mr. Walken, if I can interrupt you, I just want to make sure we got the facts straight on this, because we have a timeline of every event here before us and what date it occurred. But my understanding was after the recall, notice of intent to recall was filed and submitted to the Secretary of State. It was done by sample of signatures by the Secretary of State and certified that before that it was challenged by Senator Woodhouse and Senator Cannizzaro. Hearing was then held in the district court, and it was remanded to the Clark County Registrar of Voters. At that time, before considering any strikes, they verified all the signatures and determined they were insufficient. Is that correct, factually? Or
it's pretty close. It's not exactly correct, but it's
okay.
Pretty
please,
close.
Please clarify.
And the difference there is that the petitions were filed. And after the petitions are filed, there's a period of time within which to collect signatures. Also, mm-hmm. during that period of time, the other side can campaign against it. They can collect withdrawals of signatures. Mm-hmm. After that, the petition is submitted. That's what is required. And after it's submitted, and that happened in this case, it's actually the registrar who goes through it, and it's not the Secretary of State because it goes.
I thought it was the county clerk.
The county clerk. It's the county clerk in any county except Clark County. But by statute, the county clerk in Clark County who performs this is the registrar. The statute identifies the registrar for that purpose. So the registrar wears three hats. So the registrar is the person the county clerk who does the verifying, and then it's the filing officer. But it's still wearing three hats and doing these different, performing these different functions. So what happens in this case is that once it is verified, then the Secretary of State issues the notice. that it qualifies. And once there's a notice of sufficiency and it qualifies, the Constitution is absolutely clear. There has to be a recall election, and the only way the target can stop that recall election is by resignation. The Constitution simply does not allow for the possibility that the legislature can pass a law which will give them an opportunity to derail the train after there has already been a verified petition.
That's what I understand your argument on that, about the strikes. You know, I understand that in the Constitution. But if there has to be a way to challenge the sufficiency of the signatures in here, the court ordered it to go back to the registrar, I understand, verified every or checked every signature and said it was insufficient after checking every signature. How else can somebody subject to recall challenge it without, you know, verifying these signatures if there's some question about it?
The signatures have to be verified, and there is a way to challenge it, and that's a petition for judicial review. What happens here, though, is that what can be challenged is what has already taken place, not something that takes place after the petition is filed. And that's the difference between a withdrawal of your name and a striking of that name after the petition has already been declared valid, which the Constitution doesn't allow. A withdrawal is like a voter in a regular election changing their mind multiple times before they go to the polls. A strike request is like somebody going to the polls and voting and then having second thoughts and saying, I want to withdraw my vote. And that's exactly what's going on here. And that's why this case is different from the citizen case, which considered withdrawals and instead deals with strike requests.
Can I one more question, then I'll turn to Justice. I understand the argument, but if I understood the facts straight, that when, before considering any strike requests, when the signatures were verified by the registrar of voters there were insufficient signatures to qualify the recalls for both against the Senate.
That's incorrect, Your Honor.
Please.
What happened was it went to the registrar. The registrar followed the statute, which was to take a sampling because there of the number of signatures that there are. You do a sampling. The registrar did a sampling in both of these cases. And no matter how you look at the numbers, when that sampling was done, there were a sufficient number of signatures. And so the registrar then certified to the Secretary of State that there were a sufficient number of signatures. These are now valid petitions. And the Secretary of State issued the notice of sufficiency, and the registrar filed the petition.
So your argument is that under the law and the Constitution, there's no way to challenge it, challenge the sample and all like that?
That's not my argument at all, Your Honor.
Okay, what is it?
Because at that point in time, we have a petition that is filed, and the Constitution requires that there be a recall election at that point in time unless there is a resignation. But there can be a petition for judicial review. What could be reviewed in this petition for judicial review is what has already happened. In other words, there was a submission of a petition with signatures and withdrawals, and that was reviewed by the Secretary of State, or in this case by the registrar, and that can be reviewed to make sure that what was done was correct. What can't happen is after the petition is filed, the targets can take some other action to try to undo the petition, and that's what strike requests allow them to do.
But it's my understanding, even without the strike requests, they determined after the full review that, in fact, there weren't sufficient signatures, even if you don't consider the strike requests.
The problem with that's correct to a degree, Your Honor. The problem with that analysis is, in order to do that, is what we went to the first hearing after the complaints were filed, and the petitions were valid and there were enough signatures, and the registrar said, I cannot reconcile the strike requests unless I go back and compare them to the documents that were from before. And that's exactly what the problem is. The strike requests are one set of documents and the other documents are a different one. And the statute now requires the secretary or the registrar or whoever it is, the appropriate officer, to do that. And the registrar says, I have to go back and do this. But the statute said that this should have been done by the sample. And it was done by the sample, and that was verified. So then what they did is they went back, and it was unnecessary for them to go back and to do this. And we believe that it was an abuse of discretion, because the only reason it was sent back for this re-verification process to take place was so that they could apply these strike requests that shouldn't have existed in the first place. Once the
So the sample is conclusive? You can't require them to check the other 95%?
There wasn't a reason in this case for them to check the other 95%. That's not what they were doing. What they were doing was checking this because of the strike requests. And because the statute, which allows the target to invalidate the petition after it's already a valid petition, was what entered into this. Without that statute, without the strike request, there wouldn't have been this recounting. And then we have the problems with the recounting. So they went back and they recounted, and the registrar came back with different numbers, and we've set it out in the briefs, the problems with those numbers, and just the part of those numbers that we were able, because of the timing, to go over and review, there were more than 200 errors. Even the registrar admitted to 175 errors. And so we're within a few specific numbers of just very few, and still we have the petitions being invalidated after the fact by a procedure that was made necessary only because of the statute, which is unconstitutional to begin with. The Constitution is absolutely clear. Once there has been once it has been verified, then it is filed. As soon as it is filed, if the target shall not resign within 5 days after the petition is filed, comma, a special election shall be ordered and held within 30 days. The Constitution demands that. The legislature can't get together and adopt a statute and then amend it in 2001 in a manner which allows them to stop the recall election. That's not a statute that is in aid of the recall. That's a statute that undoes the recall and makes recall almost an impossibility. As was recognized early on by the Attorney General's opinion that we have cited and by the cases that we cited, strike requests were not allowed. And the attorney general suggested with strike requests that you could never have a recall. It defeats the recall. This court in the citizens case gave the standard for what would be in aid of the recall statute.
Can I interrupt you? I know you want to make a point, but I have a couple of questions that would be helpful to
me. I'm sorry, Your Honor. I'm not only slightly blind, I'm slightly deaf.
I apologize. I'll speak up. I'll do my best. I don't like to speak up very loud. I have a couple of questions that would help me in understanding your position. Do you agree that a subject of a recall can, if they do so timely, file a petition to challenge the verification of the signatures?
A petition for judicial review, yes. For review of the signatures that were submitted previously with the petition and the withdrawals that were submitted prior to the petition being found to be valid, yes.
Okay. And were the petitions or complaints, so-called, in this case, timely filed?
Yes, they were timely filed. We've never challenged that.
So you're not challenging the constitutional structure that the legislature created that allows a petition or a complaint to be filed challenging the verification of the signatures?
Yes, that's correct, Your Honor. We're challenging the process in the statute.
So I understand. And I understand your point about the constitutionality of the utilization of strike requests. My question is separate from that. Here, the district court judge appears to have directed further efforts to verify the signatures beyond the test that was used initially by the voter registrar. because of confusion that existed in the record submitted to the judge about the count on the verified signatures, correct?
Correct.
Do you maintain that the district court abused its discretion in any way in ordering a more complete verification process faced with that information?
Yes, Your Honor. Not only was it an abuse of discretion to do that, when the numbers came in and there were so many errors in them and the district judge was unwilling to look at all of the information that was available at that time, but simply took the numbers as though these are the numbers and these changed numbers, with even though we had demonstrated that there were many errors in that and we were unable to go through that and figure out exactly if we're going to do all of the names and all of the numbers, then we should have had an opportunity to do all of it.
Do you agree that a court, though, exercising its authority under the statute, looking at a petition for judicial review, could order a full verification if it's dissatisfied with the tests that have been used by the voter registrar or the county clerk?
If there were a legitimate reason for ordering that, yes.
Okay. Could I just ask one additional question? And would our review of the court's decision to do that be based upon abuse of discretion or de novo?
The review of what the district judge did would be on an abuse of discretion standard as we set forth in the brief. But here we want the court to look at the statute and determine what it means and that it's unconstitutional. That would be a de novo review.
So if the process required, let's assume, and I'm asking hypothetically, I understand your arguments here, both about the implication of the strike requests and the fact that the numbers may not have justified the district court's requiring further verification. But let's assume for the moment that the district court in a recall case determines that full verification is necessary. It does appear that full verification, particularly in Clark County, would exceed the 30-day period that's specified in the Constitution. Would you agree?
It could.
And if it did, I assume, based on your earlier points, that additional time would not be a violation of the Constitution.
It's not an issue that I've given a lot of thought to, but I would certainly, the procedures allow for a complaint, and the district court would have to take whatever time is necessary to resolve that through the appropriate process.
Okay. And then the final question I have is this, and this is what is troubling, I guess, more as much from a legal standpoint as a pragmatic standpoint. Your objection to the district court's process here implicates this issue. As a result of the process, it was ultimately determined, and I know that there was some question in one of the senators' cases where this might not have been the case, but it was ultimately determined that without regard to the strike requests, there weren't sufficient verified signatures. Is that right?
We've conceded that in our brief.
So I guess the question is, if we were to agree with your point, we would be sanctioning a recall based upon verified signatures that did not meet the constitutional or statutory requirements.
We think that there were enough, and had the district court done it properly, and the registrar, they would have verified that there were enough signatures, proper signatures, and so that's why we've requested that should the court not find the statute unconstitutional, there's still more work that needed to be done and was not done in the district court.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Wall, we chewed up an awful lot of your time, so we'll give you an additional 3 minutes in rebuttal, and we'll add 3 minutes to Mr. Elias's. I'm sure we'll have a lot of questions for him as well. So we'll do that.
Good afternoon, Your Honor. Again, may it please the court. My name is Mark Elias, and I represent the respondents. The court should affirm the district court decision. First, as a number of questions from the bench suggested, to determine the legal sufficiency of the petition, the district court had the authority to order a full verification. The district court credited the results of the full verification, and which proved that both petitions did not contain enough valid signatures, even before the issue of post-submission withdrawal. Second, the valid post-submission withdrawal request rendered both petitions invalid under any counting standard, and the district court correctly found the statute is constitutional and that the requests were timely submitted. I'm going to start with the issue that the court has been addressing primarily in the questions to counsel. To understand where we were at the beginning of the court hearing, the sampling process had been done. Sampling is done in order to save the municipalities and state money, rather than having to count every signature. They can count the subsample and extrapolate out. But of course, like a poll can be indicative of the final results, but we still hold elections. We don't just say, well, the poll shows that it will be X, Y, and Z.
Can you speak in the mic? I'm sorry. You're going in and out of the mic, so it's hard for us to hear in Las Vegas.
No problem.
When you move back, during your sorry.
No problem. I'm rarely accused of not being loud enough, but I will do a better job. The court was faced with holding a hearing on our challenge, and the court was quite generous with its time. It reserved their full day and said the parties should come and argue whatever they want. The court actually allowed both sides to submit an extraordinary amount of material in advance, including on the other side expert reports on signature match and you know, really took in a full record. The two parties in the trial court made a decision in advance jointly and notified the court that they were not going to call live witnesses. That was a strategic litigation decision that I made on behalf of the respondents here and counsel made on behalf of the recall, the real parties in interest, that we didn't want to bring in live testimony to go over the nits and jots of whether this signature should count or not, but that we would just rely on the record that was before and limit the argument to just lawyer argumentation. It became clear through that hearing, which went on for quite a while, that there was not a complete understanding on the part of the court, a complete agreement, without having had live witnesses, including perhaps the registrar, walk through the numbers. There was not agreement as to exactly what should count and what shouldn't count. So the judge did what a trial judge often does, which was turn to the experts, not turn to us, not turn to the other side, turn to the experts in signature counting, which is the registrar. They count signatures in all kinds of contexts. They count signatures and recalls and petitions and petition for candidacy. They compare signatures for voter registration purposes, for ballot initiatives. And they went and said, look, the court went back and said, look, can you just do a full reconciliation? And then just rather than us going off of a projection of what the real number is, let's just get the real number. Because the whole point of the statistical sampling is to save time and money. And meanwhile, we're spending an entire day litigating back and forth about this. Let's just get the actual number. And there was an adjournment of the hearing. The registrar came back with the actual complete count of signatures and found that neither met the threshold. Counsel says that, well, that went beyond the scope of what the district court judge was permitted to do under the statute, and that's simply not true. If you look at the statute, what it says is that the district court is to determine the, quote, legal sufficiency of the petitions. That's the term that's used, legal sufficiency. It doesn't say that the district court is only to accept the numbers that have come in, but rather conduct a holistic look at the legal sufficiency. presumably we could have brought in voters and put them on the stand, said that wasn't my signature, and that would have changed the petition, notwithstanding the fact that there was a verified statistical sample. They could have brought in witnesses and said, as they had submitted expert testimony, that there were signatures that should have counted as matching that didn't. So this was, and the statute anticipates that judicial review is going to give the trial judge all of the tools normally associated with a hearing that a trial judge would have.
My petition for judicial review is just based on the record, you know, without witnesses and all that. So I think that's what Mr. Wall is arguing the judge should have done, just be confined to the record and not go beyond that. So what's your position on that?
Well, I think that if that's the case, then you know, I don't know if it fits four square within the invited error doctrine, but certainly if you look at the full record below, their response to our petition was not simply to say, okay, we've got nothing to add here other than legal argument. They injected into that record substantial facts, which they, as counsel pointed out, they continued to add into the second hearing, saying, no, you should not be counting this signature. You should be counting that signature. So, you know, I don't think that that's what the statute says. The statute, like I said, gives the court the obligation to determine the legal sufficiency, and I don't think it's clear error or an abuse of discretion, depending on which standard you view as appropriate. I don't think it's inappropriate for a trial judge to do what it is trial judges do, which is to try to just get the facts. What is the actual number? And it would be truly an absurd result, as Justice Hardison said, that we were to now proceed with a recall where we know the actual number. I mean, if you take a step back, the objection coming from the other side, from my friend on the other side, is that we should remain blind to what the actual number of signatures were. We should only go with the statistical estimate of the signature number rather than the actual signature.
I think he also said there were some problems with the final number. It needs some further inquiry and all that.
What's interesting, Chief Justice, is that even if you took out all of the signatures that they identified at the second hearing, or added in, all the signatures at the second hearing, it still didn't reach the threshold. So, you know, I have been involved in a lot of election disputes, and I've won some and I've lost some. At some point, the counting stops. Like, you don't get to just keep telling the court, we'll keep counting until I get the number that I want. The court ordered a full count. It came up in a way that was disappointing to the other side. They then tried to bring in a new set of numbers, which I didn't think was appropriate, and the court ultimately decided to return to the original numbers that were provided. But even if you included those, it still wound up short of requiring, of meeting the threshold necessary for a recall. I'd like to say a word about the constitutional scheme. Because I think inherent in the argument being made on the other side is a tension over whether or not the statutory regime even meets the constitutional requirements. Because in some respects, and I think this was the to use a term from the prior case, the gist and sting of the point was, well, if it all has to happen in 5 days and 30 days, then doesn't judicial review fall? Doesn't the verification fall? Doesn't everything that requires more than 30 days, doesn't that fall? And I think opposing counsel is walking a balancing line, trying to say, no, you can still do the verification, and no, you can still do judicial review, even though that may take you beyond 30 days. So the 30 days in the Constitution doesn't mean that. It just means 30 days for this other piece, for this piece involving post-submission revocations. So let me walk you through how I think the best reading of the Constitution is that harmonizes between the Constitution and the statute. The 5 days is not a trigger for the calling of a new election. The 5 days, actually, if you read the plain text, doesn't have anything to do with an election. Rather, the 5 days is the grace period that the potentially the official subject to recall has to kind of call it all off by resigning. So if you read the plain text, if he shall not resign within 5 days after the petition is filed, okay? So it's the first step of this process is the petitions are filed, and if within 5 days of that they don't resign, something happens, okay? And what happens is a special election shall be ordered to be held within 30 days. Now, this is the point at which my colleague and friend truncates the Constitution, but in fact, it doesn't end there. It says, shall be ordered to be held within 30 days after the issuance of the call. After the issuance of the call. So there is this gap between the start of the call, the end of the 5 days, right? So the petitions get submitted. You got 5 days to resign or else the process moves forward. And then stuff happens, and I'll come back to that in a second, but stuff happens. And then there's a call, and then the election has to be within 30 days. Now, the stuff happens period is where the legislature has filled the gap, right? The legislature has said, okay, after the person doesn't resign in 5 days, now we're going to put in place certain safeguards around this. We're going to require verification. We're going to require, we're going to give an opportunity for judicial review. We're going to have the opportunity for post-submission revocation of forms, right? We're going to let, there's going to be a bunch of things that happen before that 30-day gets triggered with the call. So there's nothing about the 5 days and the 30 days that contradicts either Justice Hardesty judicial review, nor does it undermine the sampling process or the judicial review, nor does it undermine the post-submission revocation.
I appreciate your argument, but what statute triggers the call?
The call occurs after the either after the judicial review is over, or
I asked you a specific question. Are you able to cite which statute in 293 triggers the call under your interpretation? I get your point.
Yeah.
But the statutory scheme, I don't believe, says after we've done all this, as you characterized it, stuff in the middle, the call begins. Because one has to be careful here. In the context of a recall petition, the stuff in the middle could go on in perpetuity, and the 30 days wouldn't trigger until there is a so-called call.
Right, but we know that there...
So is there a statute that calls out the call? I haven't seen it. I tried to read all of these statutes, but I haven't seen it.
There is not a statute that uses the term call, as far as I can tell, but there is a statute that sets the election, that has the election scheduled. And again, that comes at the end, I'm trying to look for the statutory site, that comes at the end of either the failure to file for judicial review or the end of judicial review.
Mr. Lass, you want to take a moment and consult with
that would. Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. It's 306, 040, subsections 3 and 5.
Thank you.
There is nothing unique about post-submission revocations versus pre-submission revocations. This court laid out three rationales in Citizens for permitting, for upholding the statutory allowance for pre-submission. And all three apply equally here, and in some sense in greater force. The first was that allowing for revocation is an anti-fraud measure. It makes sure that people's signatures were not gathered inappropriately through some type of trickery or defrauding of the sign. And that's equally true whether they submit that withdrawal before or after certification. Either way, it gives the voter an opportunity to prevent fraud from having taken place, the signer from having fraud taking place. The second rationale that this court gave was that it gave voters more flexibility. And that's certainly true, right? If you give them an additional period of revoke, then you're giving them even more flexibility. So that's consistent. And then the third is that it saves taxpayers money, that we shouldn't have recalls where the threshold has not been met because it costs a lot of money for the state, it costs money for the municipalities, and it costs money for the voters to have to participate in it. And again, that's equally applicable here. There is, however, though, a fourth reason that I want to put, that I'd like to put forth before the court, that was not in Citizens, but I think presents quite squarely, which is that for some number of voters, they will have been, as citizens are presumed to, they will know the law, and they will know that in the law, they had a right to a post-submission revocation. And so they were confronted in a parking lot, and they were asked to sign a petition, and they weren't really sure, so they signed it, a recall petition. They signed it, not really sure, and then they decided to do their homework and decide, do I really want to have my signature on this recall petition or not? And they looked at the law, or they knew the law, and they said, you know what, I have some time. I can wait and see until after, I can wait and file a revocation after submission. There is a case, a very famous case out of Alabama, Roe versus Alabama, where a federal court made clear to a state that it is not free to strike down a requirement after an election is held, in that case it was an election, where the effect is to disadvantage voters who may have relied on that statute. And in this case, voters have relied on this statute.
Mr. Wall's arguing that the Constitution trumps the statute, so therefore the strike process is unconstitutional.
Right. And my point is that the federal Constitution, with all due respect, and I say this very respectfully as an out-of-stater.
Yeah, trumps the Nevada. We got that.
Trumps the Nevada Constitution, which is why I point you to Roe versus Alabama.
Okay.
Because it was, in fact, the state Supreme Court upheld the change of law, and the federal court struck down and said the Alabama Supreme Court wasn't permitted, the state court wasn't permitted to change that rule, and thereby change the settled expectation of voters.
Counsel, I appreciate your points about the constitutional interpretation of Nevada, but let me ask you this question. If the court were to conclude that the district court did not abuse its discretion in pursuing a complete verification, and similarly did not abuse its discretion in concluding that there were insufficient verified signatures to support the recall petition, does this court even reach the constitutional question that's been raised by appellant in this case?
It does not, Your Honor, which is why I started with that. Because I think in some respects this is quite a simple case. This is a trial court doing what trial courts do, which is searching for the truth. The trial court did not abuse its discretion in ordering a full reconciliation, and did not abuse its discretion in relying on the full reconciliation that was done by the responsible election official. And I agree, under principles of constitutional avoidance, this court need not go any further. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much. Mr. Wall, you have 3 minutes here.
Thank you, Your Honor. Justice Sarsby, the statute that you're looking for is NRS 306.0, subsection 6. It's direct, and it tells us what the call of the election is. We haven't been arguing that they had to have an election within 30 days. We're arguing that the remedy of a recall follows the filing of a petition. Council said that at some point counting stops, and I agree with that. At some point, the collection of signatures stops as well, and the collection of signatures stops when the petition is filed. That's exactly what the Constitution says. It says at that point that if they don't resign, it is a trigger. Within 5 days, a special election shall be ordered. It does leave the possibility of judicial review, which is a review of what has already happened. It's not a let's upset the apple cart after the petitioners are no longer allowed to do anything to try to steady that apple cart. That is fundamentally unfair, and that's the fundamental unfairness of the statute. This court did not only look at when in the citizen case at the one prong of the test of whether the statute aids the Constitution. There was another prong. This court stated, we will also consider the actual effect of the statutory provision on the recall right to assess whether it aids in the operation thereof. We will consider the actual effect of the statutory provision. This case demonstrates what the effect of a statutory provision is that allows the target, after the game is over, to keep playing.
And that allowed us to discover there weren't a sufficient number of valid signatures.
There were a sufficient number of valid signatures. The process that was followed after was flawed. And even the registrar added numbers, and then at the hearing, the registrar's counsel says, well, we'll stick with the numbers that we originally had, and we didn't have the opportunity to have it reviewed in the way it was supposed to be reviewed. It got reviewed in the context of trying to compare numbers from different documents and names from different documents after they were given the names and the opportunity to know who to target and whose name they needed to put on the strike request, because before that, everybody had the same group of people that they were targeting to try to get signatures and withdrawals. They didn't know who our signatures were, and we didn't know who their signatures were, but after the petition was filed, now they could go and target individual people, or we didn't suggest that there was fraud, although counsel suggested that would be a possibility. It's rife for fraud. If after it's closed and they know what the names are, they can upset the apple cart.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Wall. Thank you. Thank counsel for both sides, of course, for excellent arguments and briefs, as always, here. We really appreciate it. We will take this case under submission at this time, and we will be in recess to the next call of the court.